a pleasure having both of you. And as always, we appreciate you being with us on another debate. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Hope to see you right here, same time, next time.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Please listen to verses 9 to 11 of chapter Hud from the Holy Quran, recited by Mr. Sayyid Ahmad Mirzadeh Waqifi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. وَلَئِنْ أَذَقْنَا الْإِنسَانَ مِنَّا رَحْمَةً ثُمَّ نَزَعْنَاهَا لئن أذقناه نعماء بعد ضراء مسته ليقولن ذهب السيئات عني إنه لفرح فخور إلا الذين صبروا وعملوا الصالحات أولئك
In the name of God, the most compassionate, the most merciful. And if we make man taste mercy from us, then take it off from him, most surely he is despairing, ungrateful. And if we make him taste a favor after distress has afflicted him, he will certainly say, "The evils are gone away from me." Most surely, he is exulting, boasting. Except those who are patient and do good, they shall have forgiveness and a great reward.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines: Iran's top security official says the presence of foreign forces in the region is a source of insecurity and instability. The U.S. House of Representatives votes to meet President Donald Trump's demand for $2,000 COVID-19 relief checks. And Venezuela's president describes as unconstitutional the opposition's move to extend its National Assembly term despite the ruling party's win in parliamentary elections. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisumi Shah Ahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. The Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council says the U.S. Army has increased its activities in West Asia out of fear of the consequences of Washington's past mischievous acts. Ali Shamkhani added that security and stability in the West Asian region will not be achieved unless American forces leave. A week ago, U.S. Navy announced that the arrival of a nuclear-powered submarine in the Persian Gulf, accompanied by two warships. The U.S. has increased its military presence in the region as the anniversary of the assassination of Iranian General Qasem Soleimani is approaching. Washington fears Iran might once again strike U.S. forces in retaliation for Soleimani's assassination. Iran has time and again said that it does not want to initiate a conflict, but will not hesitate to defend itself in the face of any U.S. aggression. Former U.S. Army officer Scott Bennett says Zionist-controlled military-industrial complex is seeking false flag attack in the Persian Gulf to divert attention from unfolding a civil war in the U.S.
Well, I think the military-industrial complex Zionists, as they have in the past, are trying to deceive President Trump and trying to amplify and exaggerate the situation and the tensions to possibly launch some sort of a false flag attack or try and trigger a conflict in the Persian Gulf against Iran to distract people away from the unfolding civil war in the United States, which is going to begin rapidly increasing after January 6th, when President Trump exposes the Chinese Communist Party and the election meddling and the fraud and the false flag attacks that were done in the United States. That is the real tension. So any trying to draw Iran in or blame Iran for kinetic operations or say Iran's a danger, I think is a distraction away from the real wars in America.
As we are getting closer to the first anniversary of the assassination of Iran's top commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, by the U.S. in Iraq, people have begun to hold ceremonies to pay tribute to him. Humayun Abadi has attended an event in the city of Homs.
Ahead of the first anniversary of the assassination of the former commander of the Quds Force of Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, General Qasem Soleimani, people are now holding commemoration ceremonies to pay respect to this late Iranian icon. We went to the city of Qom, where a movement called Resistance Youth Front is formed to support the cause of General Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, who defeated the ominous phenomenon of Daesh. Scholars, youth, activists, and resistance movement supporters from countries like Iraq, Syria, Yemen, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Bangladesh, and India attended the ceremony to tell the world that General Soleimani's cause will not be forgotten.
It's a great pleasure for all of us, for all the people of the world who are free, who just think freely, okay? So such kind of attribution actually led us to not only memorize or recall their memory, actually also to follow their path. That is the path of humanity. That is the real war on terror, war against terror.
Shahid Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, they fight for saving the life of all mankind, of all Muslim and non-Muslim.
General Qasem Soleimani was assassinated by a U.S. strike on January 3rd last year when he was on an official visit to the Iraqi capital Baghdad. Hitting his convoy, the assault also led to the death of many others, including Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, deputy commander of Iraq's popular mobilization units, or Hashd al-Shaabi. Apart from this ceremony held here, within the coming days, a number of other events will be held across Iran under health protocols to pay tribute to General Qasem Soleimani. Humayun Abadi, Qom.
The first anniversary of the U.S. assassination of Iran's anti-terror icon, General Qasem Soleimani, is just around the corner. Our correspondent in Afghanistan has talked to a number of people there about his assassination.
The assassination of General Qasem Soleimani has not largely affected Iran's regional policies. The U.S. had thought that it could challenge Iran by assassinating the general, but it failed to do so. Likewise, the Islamic Republic has pressed ahead with its policies in the region.
General Soleimani was a key figure in combating terrorism and had a very active role in this regard. The United States assassinated him because it was aware of that fact.
1 year has passed since General Qasem Soleimani was assassinated, but his killing has failed to weaken Iran and impact its regional policies.
The U.S. killed Soleimani to deal a heavy blow to Iran, but it has failed to achieve its goal. The U.S. carries out such actions to serve its own interests, regardless of which country it is dealing with.
Officials in the U.S. city of Columbus, Ohio, have announced the dismissal of a white police officer who fatally shot an unarmed black man last week. The Columbus police chief said the evidence provided solid rationale for the officer Adam Coy's termination. The incident unfolded on Tuesday after officers responded to a non-emergency complaint about a man turning a car on and off for an extended period. Shortly after officers arrived, the victim, identified as Andre Maurice Hill, approached them on foot with his left hand holding a cell phone. Body camera footage shows that officer shooting Hill less than 10 seconds after finding him in the garage. Hill is the second African-American killed by police in less than 3 weeks in Columbus. The incident comes as anger boils in the U.S. over police brutality against African-Americans. The Democratic-controlled U.S. House of Representatives has voted to override President Donald Trump's veto of a $740 billion defense bill. The 322-87 vote, which enjoyed the support of more than 100 Republicans, leaves the legislation's fate to the Senate. If the Republican-led chamber seconds the House action, it would be the first veto override of Trump's presidency. Trump had threatened to block a $2.3 trillion pandemic aid and spending package if Congress did not boost stimulus payments. He later backed down from his threat and signed them, averting a possible government shutdown and restoring unemployment benefits for millions of Americans. Now we're joined by Max Perry, investigative journalist, to tell us more about these relief checks. Can you tell us more, what does that exactly mean for the average American?
Well, unfortunately, given the magnitude of the two crises that the country is going through right now in the pandemic, and then also the economic destruction that's been caused really as a result of the U.S. government's own mishandling of the pandemic. So given the magnitude of these two enormous crises that Americans are going through, where 65,000 Americans have died in the last month alone from the pandemic itself, and on the other hand, they're also losing millions of jobs, and so many Americans also their health insurance is dependent upon their being employed. So given the scale of devastation that's being dealt, it doesn't really mean very much, and it's really not going to be at all sufficient. You know, it did seem like the House Democrats appeared to be accepting Trump's challenge. He initially said he wouldn't sign a relief bill unless the survival checks were tripled or more than tripled to $2,000. But then just a few days later, he agreed to sign this $900 billion package on the basis of avoiding a shutdown. And the House Republicans, of course, tried to block it, but luckily it did end up passing with the two-thirds majority needed. But I'm going to be very surprised if this increase gets past the Senate, because it's GOP-controlled, and as is the case, American lawmakers are beholden to corporations and not their constituents, and that has never been more clear than with the ineptitude of the U.S. government response to the pandemic, and the fact that so many Americans are on the verge of being evicted. Food scarcity is on the rise. You name it. I mean, the highest rate of drug overdoses in a single year was 2020. So the social ills that have resulted from this combination of the pandemic and the government's mishandling is just having really severe consequences. So unfortunately, this bill, even if it does get passed, yes, it is something, but it's really not going to even put a dent in what's necessary as far as protecting the public health and securing Americans' employment and living and everything else that's necessary. And I'm not really seeing any positive signs from the incoming administration either.
Thank you very much, Mr. Max Perry, investigative journalist, joining us live from New York. Moving on, the Venezuelan president has slammed the opposition-controlled parliament's decision not to comply with the general election results. Nicolas Maduro denounced as unconstitutional the National Assembly's move to extend its term into next year. This is while Maduro's party-led alliance won the December 6th parliamentary elections by a landslide. The opposition, however, boycotted the election, accusing the government of not adhering to free and fair votes. The accusations were echoed by the U.S. and the EU even before the election was held. Washington has introduced several rounds of sanctions on Venezuela in a bid to oust Maduro and replace him with opposition leader Juan Guaido. Jesus Silva, our correspondent in Caracas, says Venezuela's self-declared president Juan Guaido is losing support from both the opposition and the U.S.
There is a new opposition that participated in the legislative election. That opposition obtained a number of deputies for the parliament, and that opposition is not backing Juan Guaido. Juan Guaido is now a lonely opposition figure. He is somehow losing the support of former allies in the international community. There is doubt in the U.S. government and also in the European Union whether or not to continue proclaiming Mr. Juan Guaido as the interim president of Venezuela. So we can see that so far there is a ratification of support from some countries in North America and in Europe, but that support to Guaido is dropping down. The future is that the side, the wing of the opposition that attended the parliamentary elections will emerge as the new opposition in Venezuela, the leading opposition in Venezuela, and they will hold debates with the ruling party in the National Assembly.
Moving on, South Africa has imposed a new nationwide restrictions amid the rising number of coronavirus cases and a variant of the disease recently detected in the country. The government has ordered a total ban on alcohol sales and the cancellation of events while making mask wearing mandatory in public. The restrictions follow a steep rise in COVID infections that have pushed the country's total caseload to over 1 million. South Africa is the worst-hit country on the continent in terms of infections. It has also recorded nearly 27,000 deaths so far. The discovery of a new COVID variant has also prompted many countries, including Britain and Germany, to ban flights to and from South Africa. Meanwhile, a World Health Organization official has said that the planet should be ready for even more lethal infections.
And I will say one thing, and it may come as a shock to people. This pandemic has been very severe. It's spread around the world extremely quickly and has affected every corner of this planet. But this is not necessarily the big one. This virus is very transmissible, and it kills people, and it has deprived so many people of loved ones. But its current case fatality is reasonably low in comparison to other emerging diseases.
The WHO Health Emergencies Executive Director also warned that emerging diseases have much fatality risk. The COVID-19 pandemic has claimed over 1.7 million lives globally and infected over 81 million people over the last couple of weeks. Several nations, including Britain, Russia, the U.S., Canada, Mexico, and Chile, have begun vaccinating their citizens with COVID-19 vaccines. More countries are now following suit or are in the process of purchasing coronavirus vaccines to launch vaccination programs. The Palestinian rights group says Israel this year has carried out 120 demolitions in Jerusalem Al-Quds alone. The Al-Quds Center for Economic and Social Rights says Israel has violated Palestinians' rights by razing their homes to the ground. The NGO has warned of mass demolitions in Jerusalem Al-Quds early next year. It says Israel has issued 22,000 demolition notices for Palestinian houses and structures in the city. Israel says it destroys these structures that lack construction permits. Palestinians reject this. They say that the demolition is in the occupied territories and aims to expand Israeli settlements. The demolitions have been widely condemned as a violation of international law. That brings us to the end of this edition of World News.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The supplication on Tuesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, and praise is His right, since Him deserves it, abundant praise. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of my soul, for surely the soul commands to evil, except as my Lord has mercy. I seek refuge in Him from the evil of Satan, who adds sins to my sin. I seek protection with Him from every wicked tyrant and unjust sovereign and conquering enemy. O Allah, place me among Thy troops are the victors, and place me in Thy party, for Thy party are the ones who prosper. And place me among Thy friends, for Thy friends no fear shall be upon them, nor shall they sorrow. O Allah, set right for me my religion, for it is the preserving tie of my affair. Set right for me my hereafter, for it is the abode of my permanent lodging, and to it I flee from the neighborhood of the vile. Make life an increase for me in every good, and death an ease for me from every evil. O Allah, bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and the completion of the number of the envoys, and his household, the good, the pure, and his companions the distinguished. And give me on the Tuesday three things. Leave no sin for me unless thou forgives it. And leave no grief unless thou takes it away. And leave no enemy. And leave no enemy unless thou repelst him. By means of in the name of Allah, the best of the names. In the name of Allah, Lord of earth and heaven, I seek to repulse every hateful thing, the first of which is his anger. And I seek to attract every lovable thing, the first of which is his good pleasure. So seal me with forgiveness from thee, O patron of beneficence.
Day of insight and allegiance with leader. On 30th of December 2009, corresponding to the 9th of the Iranian month of Day 1388, the Iranian nation created a glorious epic. A multi-million-strong epic in support of the ideals of the Islamic Revolution and the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. This great day was a day of re-allegiance of the Ummah with the leader, and it remained like a golden chapter in the history of the Islamic Revolution. This day has been named as a day of insight and allegiance with leader, Ayatollah Khamenei said on this day. If this nation prostrates hundreds of times as a sign of gratitude for the bounty of this day, it still won't be enough. On such a day, which this year falls on 29th of December due to it being a leap year, millions of Iranians poured onto the streets of Tehran and other Iranian cities. In a spontaneous show of support for the Islamic Revolution, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, and their religious beliefs. After the presidential election in 2009 in Iran, the defeated presidential candidates suggested that the election had been rigged and that there has been widespread election fraud. It is astounding that even before the votes were counted, one of the candidates claimed victory at the ballot box, saying the election would have no winner except him. This pre-planned scenario caused unrest in big cities, especially in Tehran, and little by little resulted in vandalism and riots in different parts of the capital, and this continued for almost 8 months. The defeated candidate, along with a few of his cohorts, issued several statements claiming that a great voter fraud had taken place and that the election should be nullified, though the failed candidate failed to produce a single piece of evidence or document to back up his claims. Thus, they fanned the flames of street rioting and called on youth to pour onto the streets and chant slogans against the Islamic Revolution and the Islamic system. In the heat of these events, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei invited young people and the people to be insightful and recognize the hidden hands of the enemies behind the scenes. Then U.S. President Barack Obama used to send provocative messages to youth, calling the seditionist instigators as the Iranian nation. Dutch enemy of the Iranian nation, the child killer regime in Tel Aviv, together with its comrades in crime in Europe, especially Britain, but soon declaring their support for the rioters. With the heated-up provocation of the Western media and the direction of domestic hypocrites, the issue of vote rigging in the election was used to target the very Islamic system and its sacred ideals. The slogans changed so that instead of the deeply rooted slogan in support of occupied Palestine and the Palestinian cause, there could be heard slogans against Islam and against the Palestinian cause. This small group, which was clearly being directed from overseas, had indeed targeted the very identity of the Islamic system and the Islamic revolution. As the sinister goals of the rioters were revealed, the Iranian nation became aware of the plots of the enemies and understood that the sworn enemies of the Islamic revolution had planned serious schemes for overthrowing the system and defeating the revolution. In addition, the leader of the Islamic Revolution did his best to awaken the rioters on the one hand and dissuade the heads of seditionists, the defeated presidential candidates and his accomplices, to return to the nation and to repent for their sins. However, none of these people accepted the leader's fatherly advice and continued their seditionist remarks and moves. The climax of disrespect to the Islamic sanctities took place in the Islamic month of Muharram, particularly on the 10th day of Muharram, the day of Ashura, when several mourning gatherings and placards and mosques were set on fire to further lay bare the real face of the instigators and the rioters. Therefore, the Iranian nation took decisive action and stood up against the seditionists and rioters in a massive turnout. On 30th of December 2009, just in Tehran, over 5 million people took to the streets to show their stalwart support for the Islamic Revolution and their disgust at the rioters and those who had disrespected Islamic sanctities. The nationwide turnout of the Iranian people on 30th of December 2009 was so massive that it was a pure show of support in defense of Islam, in defense of the Islamic system and the leader of the Islamic Revolution. As a matter of fact, the progressive principle of Velayat-e Faqih, or the rule of the supreme jurisprudent, which currently is manifested by the leadership of Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, is the main pillar of the Islamic Revolution. The Iranian people have on many occasions seen the Islamic Revolution move through turbulent crises under the wise leadership and navigation of Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. During the past four decades, they have passed these crises with flying colors. They know it well that any measure to undermine the status of the leadership is tantamount to undermining the authority of the infallible imams, and obedience of the leader is equal to obedience of God, the Prophet of Islam, and the infallible imams, blessings of God upon them. He is the guide towards sublimity and advancement within framework of Islamic laws. The bond of the people with such a leader is an ideological bond which has its roots in their hearts. The rioters and their masters overseas thought in vain that they could weaken this bond with rabble-rousing and obfuscating the climate, but quite opposite in fact. Their wishful thinking never materialized. The Iranian people revised their allegiance with the leader of the Islamic Revolution and showed their firm and unflinching support for Islam and the Islamic Revolution. And the ideals of the founder of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini, may God bless his soul. On 30th of December 2009, the Iranian nation proved that the Velvet Revolutions will not work in Iran as long as they march in the footsteps of their leader. The color revolutions of Michael Ledeen, Jane Sharp, and George Soros will not be effective in Iran. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei said, "You saw that sedition was kicked up, some works were done, efforts were made. America defended the seditionists and rioters, Britain defended the rioters, the Western powers, hypocrites, and kingdom-seeking defended. But what was the result? The result was that against its magnitude of unblessed unity and convergence, our dear people, our great nation, on 30th of December, 9th of day, on the 22nd of Bahman, 11th of February, demonstrated such a greatness that has astounded the world."
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The United States assassination of General Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis marked one of the most significant acts of terrorism by a state actor in recent history. Today we take a look at the fallout from this escalation and how it has shaped relations and tensions between the United States and Iran. I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique. Iranian General Qasem Soleimani was killed on January 3, 2020, in an American drone strike near the international airport at Baghdad. He was assassinated alongside Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, the deputy commander of Iraq's Popular Mobilization Units, or Hashd al-Sha'bi. Both men played an extremely vital role in the region, the importance of which cannot really be overstated. General Soleimani, or as he's also known, Haj Qasem, was a general in Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps and the commander of the Quds Force. Quds means Jerusalem in Arabic, signifying the goal to liberate the Middle East all the way to Jerusalem from the illegal occupation by Zionist and Western forces.
The Quds force helped to establish Iran as a major force in the region and to defend Iran and its allies in several theaters of combat, fighting against Daesh, the United States, and the Zionist occupation. Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, who was also assassinated in the same drone strike, was deputy commander of the PMU, or Hashid al-Sha'bi, which was formed in 2014, and is comprised of Shia, Sunni, Christians, and Druze militias, all fighting under one banner. Both these men were key players in the axis of resistance and a driving force all across the Middle East. Both the Quds force and the Hashd al-Sha'bi were hailed across the Middle East by all ethnicities in Lebanon, Syria, Palestine, Iraq, Yemen, for helping to coordinate resistance efforts and defend their lands from imperialism. Soleimani and Abu Mahdi played a key role helping to crush Daesh. The irony here is that not only did the United States and its allies give rise to the creation of Daesh, they then claimed to have defeated the problem that they created and killed Haj Qasim and Abu Mahdi, who had done the real work. In reality, Haj Qasim and Abu Mahdi have done more to fight terrorism, which the United States created, than anyone else. But because they also challenged U.S. hegemony, this is their real crime in the eyes of the Americans, and that's why they were killed. So this is why the United States always labels people who subvert their imperialist conquests as so-called terrorists, when actually they are the ones openly perpetrating terror. The United States attempted to justify this assassination by claiming it had intelligence that Haj Qasim was about to endanger American lives. Well, where is this intelligence? Because we've never seen it. Is it the same kind of intelligence about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq? If so, I would hardly put much faith in what U.S. intelligence has to say. They conveniently make up things as they go along in order to suit their foreign policy agenda and have no shame in doing so.
Soleimani was plotting imminent and sinister attacks on American diplomats and military personnel, but we caught him in the act and terminated him.
Moreover, this idea that the United States can preemptively attack countries and murder people is the same doctrine and fabricated defense that they used to justify the war in Iraq, to justify drone strikes, kidnappings, torture, rendition, and even murdering their own citizens in drone strikes. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo and U.S. President Donald Trump both claimed that Qasem Soleimani was a terrorist, with Donald Trump writing on his Twitter that he was hated in the region. Not only is the statement by the U.S. completely baseless and false, it's extremely insulting, actually. You know, after they were martyred, millions of people came out to attend their funerals. Both General Soleimani and Abu Mahdi played an extremely important role in helping to crush Daesh in Syria and Iraq. So as a Syrian Christian myself, I'm personally grateful to them for this. They helped to liberate our lands from terrorism and saved countless lives from all backgrounds, including minorities and others that would have been killed at the hands of Daesh, terrorists that the United States and its allies helped to create in the first place. So this is why after Haj Qasim was martyred, we saw several processions and masses even being held in his honor, recognizing his work. Joining me from Tehran is Dr. Sam Torabi, Director of Risalat Strategic Studies Institute. Thanks for joining me, Sam. How are you?
My pleasure.
We saw a really touching interview recently from Haj Qasim's daughter, Zainab Soleimani, where she spoke of how her father, he wasn't just fighting for Iran, but, you know, for all people, for a greater good. What did you make of that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, this has been the story of the Islamic Republic and the Islamic Revolution for 40 years, you know. I mean, the movement that happened with, you know, the Iranian nation and Imam Khomeini as its leader, you know, more than 40 years ago, 50, 60 years ago, was a global movement. It was a movement about, you know, truth versus, you know, those forces in this world who want to oppress people. And the movement in Iran, the Islamic Revolution, the revolutionary movement in Iran, decided to not go that path. And of course, this is based on Islam, the real Islam, the Islam of the Prophet, peace be upon him, the Islam of the school of Ahlul Bayt, which neither, you know, accepts being oppressed nor accepts that one becomes an oppressor. So this is the school that Haj Qasim was living. He was an embodiment of it. He was a manifestation of it. And so when the Islamic Republic, when the state in Iran decided that they're going to you know, make those strategic decisions that they did, which ended up that those forces then went into Syria. That was part of a larger thing. And the larger thing was what I was, you know, referring to right now, which is that it's not just about, you know, preventing Daesh from taking over Syria or any force that's going to cause havoc in the region, or, you know, some sort of a cynical power play between Iran and its enemies. It was a larger issue. It was, as we say in Farsi and Arabic, haq and batil. You know, that was what the war was about. Those who lived it, who saw it, I'm sure, you know, you can tell us more about this. That war in Syria really showed us the true faces of everybody. It was no longer about the labels, you know, Sunni Shia, Christian, Muslim, you know, leftist, rightist. You know, everybody had to choose the right, had to choose, you know, haq or batil. And it became very clear very soon who's on the side of haq and who's on the side of batil.
So with the one-year anniversary upon us, the United States is claiming that, you know, Iran is firing rockets at the Green Zone, at the embassy in Baghdad, and saying that they're ready to retaliate against Iran. You know, it seems as though they're preemptively blaming Iran for something that they're going to do.
Well, I mean, all of them, Trump, Biden, you know, Democrats, Republicans, they're delusional. They think that, you know, that the Iraqi people don't have their own will. They think that the Syrian people don't have their own will. They think that, you know, the Lebanese people don't have their own will. They see everything through the lens of Iran. You know, it's a mental problem. I don't know how we can solve it. You know, they can't accept the reality that Iraqis would actually not like to be occupied and would actually resist. They can't fathom that. It doesn't fit into their I don't know what we can call it. You know, the same goes for the Syrian people. The fact that, you know, the Syrian people would resist and not want, you know, crazy fanatic Takfiri Wahhabi, allow them to take over the country, and they would actually rise up and they would defend their own country, you know, with all the problems that might have existed in the system of governance that existed prior to the civil war. Nobody denies that. Nobody says that it was heaven. Nobody says that there weren't issues. But the issue is, you know, what's haq and what's batil? Obviously, you know, people are not going to sit there and just watch their country be ruined. Same goes for the Lebanese people and their resistance to the Zionist occupation of their lands and the continued threat that they face from the Zionists. So these are the problems that we have with the West, with the British, with the French, and now with the Americans as the inheritors of the imperial powers, as the inheritor of the British Empire, and also to a certain extent the French, for those countries that were under French influence. So they just can't, you know, believe that people would have their own agency and decide that they don't want to be occupied and that they might want to resist occupation. And let's not forget, you know, we talk about the American embassy, but it's actually, you know, it's the size of the Vatican. I mean, it's a huge, you know, it's basically the Americans are occupying a major part of Baghdad, which is the capital of a sovereign state. And in many ways, they want to effectively turn it into American soil, which is technically what happens when you have an embassy. It's technically the soil of the country in terms of the laws or in terms of the ability of the country in which that embassy is located to enter into that area. So, you know, it's not a building. It's not a bunch of towers or a bunch of buildings or whatever. It's an entire section of Baghdad, which, you know, is being ripped away from Iraqi sovereignty. And so this is a problem. This is not something that can last in the long run. This is something that, you know, imperial powers do. This is what countries do that want to come and stay for, you know, centuries, which, you know, is, again, another delusion among the Americans.
Right. So, I mean, America thinks that, oh, Iran fired a few rockets in response and that's it. But they don't even really have someone of the same value or caliber as Haj Qasem on their side.
Well, we have Haj Qasem, what we had with Abu Mahdi, these were exceptional human beings. These were people who worked on themselves. These were people who struggled and who reached a high level of consciousness, who reached a high level of purity in their personal behavior and in their lives. you know, let's not even go there with some of the things that we see. Many cases where, and this is all out in the open, where there is reports of massive corruption, personal and structural, within U.S. military. We have scandals erupting around the world where they are being bribed with, you know, things that I can't even mention on TV right now. And so, you know, these are like admirals and captains and generals and colonels. And these are supposed to be the so-called, you know, whatever army of the United States, the military forces of the United States. These are supposed to be the leaders of, so, you know, whatever mythology they want to create from it. And, you know, for us, we have to even not even put these two on a level where we can compare them. These are I'm talking about Haj Qasim, I'm talking about and of course, you know, the thousands of others who, like them, of their generation, after them. You know, when you enter into that, when you enter into that world, it's a world where you have to really purify yourself. It's not something that is going to just go away. It's not something that is going to go away with sanctions. I mean, you know, just think about any other country or society in history having to endure these sanctions would have collapsed, you know, and yet we didn't, and we haven't, and thriving. Yes. Most Iranians don't have to worry about the basic necessities of life. Not only that, but we also have been able to really advance on in ways that, you know, we were told the only way you can do that is if you connect yourself to some great power and become their obedient servant, and, you know, they will give you the technology.
Sam, thanks so much for your time and your valuable insight. Really appreciate having you on. Thank you so much. We'll be right back after this short break.
Communique is a program in which Richard Medhurst, the independent journalist and political commentator, gives his views of controversial issues of our time and interviews famous politicians and personalities. This program is broadcast every Sunday by IRIB English Radio.
So after Haj Qasim and Abu Mahdi were martyred, how do you see the future of the axis of resistance?
Well, you know, this is another thing that's a Western problem, which is that their system of commanding and their system of leading is you have some heroic figure, you know, leading a bunch of sheep. And so if you get rid of that heroic leader, the sheep don't know what to do. But that's not the way it works here. The way it works is
right.
The whole movement that Imam Khomeini led is you have human beings being developed. So it's not that Haj Qasim was this person who is irreplaceable. Yes, he is irreplaceable to a certain extent in terms of a historic figure. But, you know, it's not like when with him leaving or with Abu Mahdi not being here that things are going to change in any way, shape, or form. We have a system that's trying to actually develop human beings who are multifaceted, who not only look at things in terms of career and in terms of advancing their own personal ambitions, but in terms of building themselves and purifying themselves and self-edification. And so this is the kind of people that we have, you know, conducting the affairs, especially those who are involved in the military, whether it's the guards or whether it's the army or whether it's Basij or any other branch that's working. So it's not going to make any difference, because the strategic goal of the Islamic Republic is to expel the Americans from West Asia. It's the stated goal, as stated by the Supreme National Security Council, as stated by the leader of the Islamic Revolution. This is the goal, and it doesn't matter if it's Haj Qasim who is commanding certain forces or whether it's others who are commanding it, or it doesn't matter even if it's Ayatollah Khamenei who is the leader or not. These things are not going to change with the coming and going of people. As you may have seen in the way that these Americans talk, they always talk about, well, when Ayatollah Khamenei is gone, we will do this, we will do that. Well, you know, this is exactly the same thing they said when Imam Khomeini was alive. They said, well, when Imam Khomeini goes, we'll do this, we'll do that. So it's this false projection of their own way of doing things, which is you have some heroic figure leading a bunch of people who have no, you know, ability to think for themselves. This is not the way it works here. And so with him or without him, the path continues. The strategic goal, as I mentioned, is the expulsion of America from West Asia. It's going to happen. And of course, in terms of Israel, it's the establishment of a Palestinian state, of a Palestinian republic, where Christians, Muslims, Jews live as equal citizens of that Palestinian state. It's not about throwing the Jews into the sea, which is the propaganda that the Zionists always, you know, use when we talk about ending Israel. Ending Israel is not about killing Jews. It's not about getting rid of Jews. It's about ending a Zionist apartheid state. Exactly the way you had a apartheid state ending in South Africa, and it's evolving into a different thing. And so these goals are clear. We are not worried about, you know, losing the support of this president or that president. And so, you know, basing whatever we do on whoever is going to call us from some second-tier official from the U.S., you know, ordering us what to do or what not to do. You know, accept Israel and we'll give you, you know, this much money or whatever it was. Even during the time of the Shah, this was the case. It's not about, you know, being closed off to the world. It's about, you know, it's the system that we have in this region. The British called it, and still call it, Arab facade, which is the strategic, economic, and the security matters are determined by the West, and the leadership is Arab facade. This is in their own documents, and so these are the things that we're dealing with. Countries like Iran, countries like Syria, don't fit into that scheme of domination, and so that's why they're threatened, and in the case of Syria, you know, pulled into this tragic war that went on for so many years.
The killing of General Soleimani marked one of the biggest escalations between the United States and Iran in recent history, which is actually saying something, given how many provocations the U.S. has committed vis-a-vis Iran just in the last 2 years alone. Many speculated that his slaying would ignite an all-out conflict. But one can argue that given the magnitude of this transgression, that Iran has actually shown unbelievable restraint. Just ask yourself for 1 second, if Iran had assassinated an American general, wouldn't America have declared war in response? Once again, we see this imperialist double standard where it's okay for the U.S. to violate international laws and commit terrorism while pointing the finger at others. Iran has maintained that its real response in order to properly avenge General Soleimani has not come yet, and that they are saving this for a later date. Now, 2 days after the assassination, back in January, the Iraqi parliament unanimously passed a bill demanding the expulsion of all American troops from their soil. After all, this was not just an act of aggression towards Iran, but also a violation of Iraq's sovereignty as it took place on their soil. The United States has been illegally occupying Iraq ever since its invasion in 2003 over weapons of mass destruction that were never found. And, of course, the U.S. ignored this new measure by Iraqi lawmakers and has still not left Iraq. A few days later, after the assassination, Iran fired a barrage of rockets at the Ayn al-Assad air base in Iraq, which belongs to the illegal U.S. occupation forces. No one was killed in this attack, but the U.S. hilariously claimed that 110 of its personnel had received, quote, traumatic brain injuries from this attack. Again, one cannot really consider this a true response to the assassination of General Soleimani, as the U.S. military does not even have anyone who is really comparable or of the same value to Haj Qasem, no less a bunch of regular service members, as they call them. Nonetheless, in another significant move, Iran said it would no longer abide by the limitations of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the JCPOA, or Iran nuclear deal, as it's also called. Iran said it would continue to cooperate with international monitors, but would abandon the constraints on the number of centrifuges it's allowed to have. This marked the fifth step in Iran reducing its commitment to the deal, after Trump unilaterally pulled out of it in May 2018, and then also slapped Iran with crippling sanctions, and also proceeded to order this assassination, which is frankly tantamount to a declaration of war. In the days following the killing, the U.S. Congress introduced the Iran War Powers Resolution in order to try and limit Trump's ability to use military force against Iran. It passed both the Democrat-controlled House and the Republican-controlled Senate, only to be vetoed by Trump himself. In order to justify this act of terrorism, the Trump regime pointed not only to the U.S. Constitution, but also to the 2002 authorization of use of military force against Iraq. These arguments are farcical either way. Just because the U.S. Congress votes to attack another country, that doesn't mean that it is okay or legally acceptable. Even if both houses of Congress wanted to limit Trump's powers in this regard, it's still not up to the United States to unilaterally decide that it can attack other nations. U.S. law does not supersede the U.N. Charter nor international conventions. This is absurd. It's ridiculous. And it's actually very typical of American exceptionalism. Agnes Callamard, who's the U.N. Special Rapporteur on Extrajudicial Summary or Arbitrary Executions, condemned the assassination of Haj Qasem and Abu Mahdi. She said the attack was an unlawful killing and concluded that the United States had violated the United Nations Charter. Speaking about a memo that the Trump regime gave to the U.S. Congress, she said information that Trump administration officials provided was remarkably vague and inconsequential as far as a possible imminent threat is concerned. Even at the most basic level, the U.S. did not demonstrate that striking Soleimani was necessary.
The targeted killing of Iranian General Qassem Soleimani, concluding that his was a violation of the UN Charter governing the use of force and an arbitrary killing. On January 3rd, 2020, the world moved into a very different space. On that day, the United States used unarmed drones to target and kill Iran's top general, Qasem Soleimani, as well as a number of his companions, including largely Iraqi representative. That is a significant and troubling new development. It is the first known incident in which a state invokes self-defense as justification for an attack against a government official